Who are you?
I'm Yanis from Falls.
Yanis, welcome to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thanks for having me.
Right off the bat, Yanis, I want to say thank you for repping Skinny Puppy all these years.
Sweet.
You love the pup. Tell me about your repping of the pup over the years.
I got into Skinny Puppy when I was probably 15. I got pretty obsessed with Ogre and the whole cast of characters, Al Jorgensen and Ministry and everything. I think the first track I really got into is Assimilate. But then I obsessively collected everything. I used to go to a record fair in Oxford and like try and scout down the vinyl. And there wasn't really many people in Oxford that knew Skinny Puppy. And I wrote Skinny Puppy on my shoes, my school shoes, and people thought it was pretty weird.
I love that you mentioned it in interviews. And also, Skinny Puppy are from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Yeah. So I thought I'd further give you a Skinny Puppy CD with some more tracks of the pup.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is like a rarities thing, isn't it?
Some of the more older tracks on the Network record label from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Yeah, I know Network. Yeah, they're nice guys.
Yanis, is it true that you once got paid in tuna pasta at a gig?
It is true, yeah. Yeah.
That was in Surrey? Could you explain the circumstances?
You know about that. We used to play house parties when we first started the band out. So we didn't do that many like proper like paid shows. And instead, we would just rock up at houses where we would be invited. And one of the places we went to, it turned out that it was just a guy, one of his friends and his mum. And we set up in his shed and we literally played an entire set for these three people. And the mum just came out with a bowl of tuna pasta at the end of it. And that was our thanks.
Thank you, Surrey.
Yeah, exactly.
How did Freud's play in the history of Falls?
Freud's is a bar in Oxford where me and Edwin Congreve, the keyboard player, met. And it's in an old kind of 19th century ex-theatre. It's kind of it's pretty grand looking building. It's like a neoclassical temple. But it's actually pretty dilapidated and kind of side, and the drinks are mediocre. But yeah, me and Edwin used to just like put techno records on in there, and Edwin hadn't actually joined the band, and the band was sort of forming, and me and Jack got drunk in there one night, and we asked Edwin to join as a joke because he couldn't play keyboards, and then he rocked up at practice. We'd kind of forgotten about it, and he showed up to practice on the Monday, and we were slightly alarmed.
Yanis, what was it like reading poetry at age 15 at the Cat Weasel Club?
That was a pretty formative experience. It was like a... It was a kind of hippie kind of thing. It was open mic. Lots of weird flotsam and jetsam from the Oxford kind of neoliberal scene would hang out there.
Namely?
No one that you would know. Just like people with kind of quilted trousers and... not dissimilar to yours, actually. Yeah, I'd go there with some friends because we could smoke and they would serve us alcohol as well without IDing us. And it was a place where we could read our angsty and overwrought poems to the world.
I noticed that it used to be a church. Have you played organ in any churches at all? Like you go into a venue and there's like a cool organ and you get to try it out?
No, Jimmy has though. We played at the Royal Albert Hall and Jimmy got a little pop on the organ there, which is pretty special. But I'm a pretty terrible keyboardist. I can't do it.
Yanis of Falls, is it true that you played with Maroon 5 at the Regal? Maroon 5?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. It was a TV show called Transmission that used to show back in the day in England on Channel 4. And it was our first TV thing. And it was Maroon 5, us, Jamie T was there. But yeah, Maroon 5, like... did, you know, take after take of this one song. Like they got to like perfect it in front of this like increasingly bored and rambunctious studio audience that just wanted to get the hell out of there. But it was definitely an eye-opener because we just kind of rocked up. We had no experience of any of that sort of stuff, and we just got one take for our song, which is probably why it sounded pretty dreadful.
Yanis, can you explain the Oxford punt? What is the Oxford punt?
Do you mean the music thing, or do you mean the actual physical punt object?
There's a couple things, aren't there? There's punt, which is like a boat, but the music thing you played with Elizabeth, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's going way back. The Oxford punt is like a kind of mini festival in all the venues of Oxford, of which there aren't that many, but it's kind of run by a long-standing magazine in Oxford called Night Shift that's like the love child of this guy, Ronan Munro. And it would just provide like a platform for all these young bands. And it was where I first played in this band, Elizabeth, when I was 15 years old. And we found a weird radio that day that we started receiving. I think it was the first time we trashed anything on stage, and we trashed that thing, and it caused ripples in Oxford.
And punt the boat.
Yeah, punt the boat is like a gondola, like a Venetian gondola, and it's what people like to do on a sunny day in Oxford. It's like get on the river with some strawberries, maybe like, you know, a girlfriend or boyfriend, and go like punting and maybe have a swim. Although the river does have Viles disease, you can get this poisonous disease there.
Over to North America, Yanis, tell us about Larry from Detroit.
What do you want to know about Larry from Detroit?
He helped your song Moon, didn't he? What's the difference?
Larry, he's not somebody I know well. I had one encounter with him. We played at the Majestic Magic Stick in Detroit. And Detroit is somewhere that has affected me a great deal every time I go there. We played the show, and I was kind of half cut, and I came outside, and there was kind of like some burnt out kind of tenements opposite, and I basically followed the sound of this drum across the road, and I kind of went out there, and it was just this guy Larry who must have been like his late 50s, pretty out of his mind, but playing on two dustbin drums, and he was amazing, and like he was just talking about the Illuminati and ranting and raving, but he had all these like rudiment skills still, like military precision marching band snare. And I sat and like I spent 20 minutes with him, and it was just something that really, like, I don't know, it affected me, and some of it crept into the song Moon, in the sense of like having this decayed urban previously great standing of man just destructed, but then there's still this kind of pulsing core of raving human madness in the middle of it.
Yanis, I have another gift for you right here. Pastor T.L. Barrett.
Oh, I like it. Oh, really? Oh, that's sweet.
Who, Jim James has said, quote, has put out one of the most important LPs ever made. I think you were into the pastor T.L. Barrett, weren't you? You had some YouTube links to him.
Yeah, Like a Ship is like, that's basically what I've heard. I heard some of this stuff off a Good God gospel compilation, and Like a Ship, and there's another track called Yes, God is Real, that's by the Gospel Comforters. But that's a beautiful track.
Where did you hear about the pastor T.L. Barrett?
Just off this compilation. I can't remember where I picked up. I kind of ravenously just buy records that kind of on instincts at record stores, and it was one of the things I found, and this track
Like a Ship.
Yeah, stayed.
And now you can get the full story, because inside there's some nice healthy liner notes. Do you like liner notes?
Yeah, I do like liner notes. Thank you. Do I get to keep this?
Yes, that's for you to keep, Yanis.
Alright, thank you very much. That's great.
And Yanis Folds, here we are at the Commodore Ballroom.
Yeah, we are here, right.
Quote, what is a mental, moral, and music meltdown?
It was our last show here.
Ba-boom, at the Commodore Ballroom.
Yeah. We'd been on tour for a long time, and things had just got a little crazy, and the shows had got a bit feral. And we overstayed our welcome on stage, I think, by a good hour, and there was spitting. There was supposedly act of violence that I don't really remember about, but I know that for the next week, as we proceeded down the west coast of the States, somebody at the Commodore Ballroom had forwarded on warnings about our band to the rest of the venues we went to, so we got kind of, we were met with raised eyebrows everywhere we went.
That's what I love. Actually, I thought that the promoters warned ahead of time of you playing Vancouver. I thought that was genius, that the promoters are warned ahead of time.
Yeah, no, they weren't. They warned the other cities after we'd played here. But it was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
Well, looking at the stage there, I think you were chucking a lot of stuff off the stage. Were your bandmates trying to stop you? Do your bandmates ever try to stop you? Like, you're climbing up a speaker stack, you're chucking stuff, you're chucking puke. What did the bandmates do?
I don't know. They definitely don't try and hold me back. There was one time in London where it got a little bit out of control. I think I tried to pull down Walter's bass amp, and I think it depends what spirit it's done in. If it's done it can turn dark, and when it turns dark, that's when I think the bandmates worry.
In the true tradition of Oxford music, Tallulah Gosh,
a band that I've read a lot about, but don't really ever follow at all. But that's one of the bands that was always written about in Night Shift a lot.
And the Candy Skins and Dust Ball, right?
Candy Skins recorded in Shonk Studios. My first ever demo recorded was there. They were a great band. Tragic kind of story as well of the fickle nature of the music industry as well, where they kept like having just bad luck. But you know, they had a lot of bad luck against them. And then Dust Bowl, as again, like he, the singer from Dust Bowl, and then they became Dive Dive. He was like, he used to come to our rehearsals and he really encouraged me a lot. He used to also give me free videos at the video rental store he worked at. He's a good guy. I don't think we'd be playing music without him, probably.
When you first started playing music, were you into surf rock? Do you have a secret surf rock obsession? I think you do, don't you?
A little bit, yeah. I like The Ventures. I like The Ventures a lot. I like some Dick Dale, some Link Ray. But I kind of got into it. Since this band's been going, I got into it. And I kind of wanted to make what I thought would be a surf rock record, but it turned out to be Total Life Forever, which doesn't sound that surfy.
What kebab shop does David Ma work in?
He used to work at a place called Shish, and it was in London. It was kind of in Shoreditch. I don't even know if it's there anymore, but the specialty was Afghan chicken, which was also a haircut you could get next door at the combined barbershop. And yeah, so when we met him, he worked there because he's Australian, so that was his sponsor for Visa. But when he shot all the first videos for us, he was like, he would shoot a video and then he'd go back and he'd just like make some doner for people.
That's awesome. It's great to have a guy like that. One stop shopping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, haircut, video, and dinner.
Oxford. The pubs in Oxford. What about the legendary...
Turf?
The legendary...
Jericho?
The legendary Bear Pub.
Oh, the Bear Pub, yeah. What about it?
I'm just curious. What do you think about the Bear Pub?
It's all right. I used to drink there a little bit. It's tiny. It's like made for like hobbits or like people my size. It's like really small and it's old. It's not the. I think they claim to be the oldest pub. I'm not sure if it is. But it's all right. It's pretty good.
I think there's a big tie collection on the wall too.
Yeah, it has all the Oxford like boating ties and all that. It's very much like part of the academic tradition of Oxford. It's kind of a tourist trap, but it's good for like a bit of mead. If you're into that sort of thing.
Yanis, what do you remember about playing the Queen's Social Club in Sheffield?
I remember that. That was pretty recently. That was the start of a tiny tour we did in the UK. It was like we tried to play this kind of smallest and most out-of-the-way venues in the UK to an extent. We could have gone probably further afield, but it's in Sheffield, and it was just like a tiny little weird working man's bingo hall with like a broken Hammond organ backstage, and we played everything pretty much. We played like a bunch of the new songs there for the first time, and we played them pretty horrifically.
Weren't you also hanging from the ceiling?
Probably, yeah.
Or do you do that every gig? It's like for me to say, well, Yanis hung from the ceiling. That happens every gig.
Not every gig. I remember, I think, at that place, they had that kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but it was like roof paneling where you can punch through the paneling and hang on to grids. I used to be into a band called Sweep the Leg Johnny. I still am, but I love this band, Sweep the Leg Johnny, and there's some footage I remember watching where the guitarist climbed through that paneling, so it kind of inspired me to try and do the same thing.
Yanis, when you're traveling and you run to the airport, you sometimes encounter security guards, but Irish security guards love you guys?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I had a debauched night in Dublin after a show, and I woke up and I didn't know where I was, and we had to fly.
As it should be.
Yeah, exactly. And we had to fly for the first time to the States. I hadn't been to the States before. Yeah, and basically I was missing my flight and I run through, and then as I was running through, the security guard was just like, great show last night, and just winged me straight through to the gate. It was definitely one of the better moments it was one of the bigger perks of being in a band.
And how about flipping to maybe not so great moment in Chicago? Why did you fight your merch guy?
I think that was a wild show. There was a lot of whiskey that night, and I went out and actually had a fight with my girlfriend, and I just went crazy, and I ended up like I don't remember that much of this, but I remember the next day our bass player Walter told me that at one point I was like in the middle of the road with like traffic coming by, and I was sort of just like, I was kind of almost, you know, I was just oblivious to traffic. I trashed some bar stool in front of some fans that had been at the show, and they were less than impressed. And then I threatened to, apparently I said I'd chop our merch guy's head off, and then he threatened to quit the next day. But I made it up to him. It was definitely not a highlight of my character.
And then you woke up and an earring had been ripped off your face. Did you get an earring ripped off your face at one time? How did that happen, and how much did that hurt?
That was separate. That was in a fight in Reading, which is kind of a town near Oxford. it's pretty grisly in Reading. It's like, it's, you know, a lot of British city centres, it's about, there's an undercurrent of violence to them, particularly on the weekend. That's like, it feels like it's the culmination of a lot of people's nights. And I think we just crossed the wrong guys. We were on tour with a band called Cut Off Your Hands at the time from New Zealand. And they were bad. They were like, they like to whip up trouble. Because in New Zealand, what's the worst that's really going to happen to you? But the worst that happened to me then was I can't remember what it's called there, but the inner ear bit, like, pulled out. It was pretty sore.
How about Peru and Chile, touring down there? What's it like there if New Zealand bands go and stir up trouble?
It's good there. We've always had a great time in South America. I mean, it's kind of like, it's definitely a bit more intense. There's people waiting at the airports with, like, all sorts of, a lot of actual beautiful artwork, like the portraits of us, watercolors, like oils, all sorts of things. But yeah, they're pretty rabid and definitely diehard fans out there. I got some crystals from the Atacama Desert given to me in Chile that was pretty cool. But yeah, we had the most recent time in Mexico, we had a guy that wanted to propose to his girlfriend on stage. So we organized that for him. And that was actually, it was one of the more beautiful moments we've ever had on stage. It was genuinely affecting and touching.
Now, do you think this is just for the Fools? I guess, of course, it's just for the Fools. Or does it happen to other bands, too? Did you feel touched into doing it just for you? Or did they maybe slide it in that they were waiting for other bands as well?
It's been specific.
Anything, really.
No, I think there's something. There's definitely something in the passion in those countries that makes the fans, like, more diehard. And probably the fact that we seem more exotic to them because we're not there as frequently. I think every band probably has diehard fans. I think there's something about our band that probably, there's something about the nature of our fans that's quite diehard a lot of the time.
Who is Rumpel Hirshon?
I don't know. Where is that from?
That's you, isn't it? Rumpel Hirshon? Isn't that your nickname?
Kind of. Where did you find that out from?
It's you, though, Rumpel Hirshon. Isn't, like, your cat or something like that? And then there's Rumpel Hirshon. Those are two significant names.
Yeah, they are. They are two significant names. So Rumpel, my first gerbil was called Rumpel, like short for Rumpelstiltskin. It was actually unfortunately eaten by my brother's gerbil. It was just sad. And then my mother's...
Gerbil on gerbil action?
Yeah, they ate each other, yeah. It was dark. Yeah.
You watched that happening?
No, I didn't. They were in my brother's room. My brother went away for a few days. I was young. I was like 12 years old, and I went in, and I had forgotten to feed them for like a day. And I went in, and my brother's one had eaten my one. It was pretty sad. And my mother's name's Hirshon. So I don't know where Rumpel Hirshon. Maybe it's like my porno name or something.
Baboom, and you are Yanis of?
Foles.
Foles. Quote, decadence, debauchery, and indulgence.
Touring?
Actually, what I'm referring to are the May student balls in Oxford.
Oh, of which there was a recent meltdown, apparently.
Yeah, I heard that they were going to have, like, a live shark in a tank, and as well, they were going to charge, like, $245. Is it usually that debauchery?
I mean, they are pretty out of control. I've never actually been to one of them, but I've got a lot of friends that have been to one of the college balls. They're expensive, and then they're, like, kind of high profile, and they get crazy. There's a secret one that's called Piers Gaveston. That's definitely, if you're in Oxford and you want to go to something that's like special, that's the one to go to. It's like invite kind of only. You have to find out about it. You don't know where you're going until the day. And I shouldn't probably even be talking about it.
What happens when you get there? Like, what makes it special? Do they have to live shark and tank, or what makes it special?
No, it's just super. I think it gained notoriety in the 80s because a lot of like MPs' kids and stuff, like politicians' kids would go there. And the only rule is no phones. So basically just anything goes on there. And like Piers Gaveston was Edward II's lover, I think. I think it started off as a kind of like, you know, like an orgy basically back in the day, but it's evolved into something that's a bit more, well, I don't even know if it is a bit more, just, yeah, it's just crazy.
So that raises the question, have Foles played an orgy before?
No.
What's the closest you've got to playing an orgy?
I don't know where that would be. I don't know, maybe Japan or something? I don't know.
What happened there? A sushi orgy?
Yeah, sushi orgy with Yakuza tattooists. Yeah, at Fuji Rock.
And you love eating too, don't you?
What's that gonna mean?
Well, high street butchers. What are your favorite high street butchers?
Oh, yeah, we went to We made our record in Willesden Green, and we wanted to collect bones to make percussion on the record. So at first we went out and tried to collect bones ourselves, and then we realized that the task was kind of like a bit grisly and kind of irritating. So they had like studio interns, so we started sending them out to go and collect all manner of bones for us, and then they would make them boil them down, scour the gristle and the cartilage off. And it was a big endeavor. We had to order in special pots and pans because some of like the cow shoulder blades are too big to get in regular pans. And this went on for about a month and a half. And then at the end of it, we realized they just sounded, it was the sonic equivalent of bathos. There was like nothing going on. We hit them together and it was like that. It was that uninspiring.
But what about the food on them? Like, you could have eaten the food off the bones.
Still on that?
Yeah, like, couldn't you, like, cook some, like, giant meal?
Well, we were getting them, literally, there was, like, no meat on them, really, not much. We could have, though. We could have if we thought about it. We were kind of too busy getting whipped by Alan Moulder and Flood in the studio, so.
What's the Pitt Rivers Museum like in Oxford? They have, like, shrunken heads there. Have you been there?
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is. I think it's got the largest ethnographic collection of artifacts in the world. It's not that big in terms of size, but they've got like drawers and drawers and drawers of stuff that you can just pull out and look. And they have, yeah, shrunken heads from, I don't know if it's the Yanomamo tribe in the Amazon, but they've got a collection of shrunken heads. They've got amazing Amazonian jewelry made from like whole toucans and strange like exotic birds, Amazonian birds. They have a bagpipe that's from my village, but it's from the 19th century. They got everything there.
You can just go and touch it? Like, do people try to steal stuff? Are you actually able to open a drawer?
But it's glass covered, yeah. It's glass covered. But they have, like, they really have incredible things there. It's definitely a place that I would, like, endorse if you're ever in Oxford.
Is that, like, your number one museum that you've been to? What are your favorite museums winding up here, Yanis, from the Falls?
Pitt Rivers, Pompidou, if you're alone, the Pompidou, and the John Soames Museum in London. He was like an eccentric collector of all sorts of things, and he made his house into like a museum, basically.
What's in there? Like, what would you see in there? Just interesting little tidbits?
Yeah, just weird, just paint. And it's more the way that he's built it, because he didn't have much space, so there's paintings upon paintings, and you pull them out on top of each other, and he had just had like all sorts of stuff. It's pretty cool.
Your manager, Peter, also managed like Madonna, Def Leppard, Metallica. Have you learned anything from Peter? Has he told you any yarns about those artists?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned stuff from Peter. I don't know if it's from them. The things I've learned from Peter is like to face the audience. When Peter started managing us, I didn't ever face the audience, and that was the main contribution he made to our band.
How about specific stories about Madonna or Metallica or anything like that? Has he mentioned anything about that? Because I know he was making some comments on Bieber a little while back.
Was he? I don't know about the Bieber stuff. I mean, he's definitely told me a bunch of stories. I don't know if I can recount them to the full extent. He talks about drive and hunger and the fact that somebody like Madonna, there's a kind of an insatiable motor inside an insatiable appetite, and that's what's kind of kept it going for so long. So we talk about stuff like that, about the impulses and the desire to make music and to follow it through for a long time.
Is he still tight with those former people that he's worked with? Like, do you ever hit him up to get on, like, Madonna guest lists or Metallica guest lists or Def Leppard guest lists?
Metallica, definitely. He still works in Metallica, so I don't know about the older people. He started working with Jimmy Page again after he used to work with Jimmy Page and stopped working with him, started working with him again. I don't know how it ends up, if your relationship ends with Peter Mensch. I don't know how it goes. I'd like to think that it would be all right, though. But, yeah, I'm going to try and hit him up for Wimbledon tickets. Because he's got, like, access, yeah, he's got, like, parliamentary access now.
Ah, now you're talking. Like, screw Def Leppard, let's go to Wimbledon.
Yeah, exactly.
Just curious, do you know Aviva Yael at all?
Yes, I do, yeah.
How do you know Aviva Yael?
We made a record. How do you know Aviva Yael?
I have to know about the Falls.
Yeah, I know Aviva. She's a great girl. We met her when we were making our record in New York, the first record, and we ended up going to a lot of like rooftop parties in Williamsburg at the time. It was kind of exciting there back then. And yeah, we just met her there, and then she's David Cross's niece, right? Something like that. And yeah, and then we just stayed friends ever since.
Do you still like the Spin Doctors?
I like Two Princes, and that's basically the extent of my Spin Doctors knowledge. Walter's a big general Spin Doctors fan, but Two Princes was a song that, like, yeah, it took me through my 8-year-old phase into my 9-year-old phase when I got into like House of Pain.
From Skinny Puppy to the
Spin Doctors.
You love it all, Yanis.
Yes, I do.
And speaking of all, how did you find about me, Nardwuar the Human Serviette? How did you find me?
I watch YouTube and stuff, and you're well known.
Was there anything that grabbed you at all? Because I guess I was just curious.
I think the thing that grabbed me, I watched the ASAP Rocky interview that I enjoyed that you did recently, and then I watched some other stuff, and I watched your Kurt Cobain interview from 1994. And I thought that was it was weird. Like, I went back and just watched a bunch of Nirvana stuff, and I ended up on that video, and I just thought, I don't know, there was something arresting about that interview. It was a weird interview, I thought.
Yanis, lastly here, are you still a soap dodger?
What's that mean?
Bizarre magazine called you a soap dodger.
That sounds defaming, isn't it? That's libelous, probably.
Yeah, why did they call you a soap dodger?
I don't know, because I'm grubby or something? Is that what it's going to mean?
It was something about when you're recording one of your records, you didn't shower for 11 days.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. It got a little bit Howard Hughes in... Howard Hughes without the achievements of Howard Hughes in when we made Total Life in Sweden. We were living in the studio, and... It was just like I just ate pad thai for 11 days straight and didn't shower, and obsessively worried about the record, and almost had a punch up with the producer, and it was just a dark time. But it wasn't like Nebuchadnezzar level of I was still relatively hygienic.
Yeah, it's okay to dodge the soap in those circumstances.
If you're making a record, it should be like that. It's meant to be like Heart of Darkness. I still brush my teeth.
Apparently, there was some sort of DVD that came out that when people insert it in their DVD drives, it'll smell like pizza.
Is that true?
Yeah, like it warms up and actually smells like pizza. So I guess you could have Schmelz associated with your CD the next time. Some Schmelly Schmelz. What were the Schmelz in Sweden, actually, now that I'm just thinking about it, when you're recording there?
What's that?
What were the Schmelz in Sweden like? Because you were saying, like, what would have you smelled like? If you were a soap dodger in Sweden, what would have you smelled like?
It smelled like tobacco, weed, pad thai, and fear.
Thanks so much for your time, Yanis. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
Not really. Just scratch that itch.
Well, thanks so much, Yanis of Fools. Keep on rocking in the free world, and do-do-do-loo-doo.
Boom.